He nods, considering me. Hope you're as good an architect as I think you are. Hearing this from him sends a jolt of excitement and anxiety through me. An architect's job is to manipulate the world of the level in favor of her team. If there's an obstacle, like a bridge, I would collapse it to let us through. If there were floating rocks, I'd push them together to create a bigger platform. An architect is a designer of the level, dedicated to changing the world on the spot in favor of her team. It's one of the most important jobs on a team. Last year, the Phoenix Riders lost their architect because he'd been caught gambling away millions on Warcross games. The entire team was punished heavily, too. Knocked down to the bottom of the rankings and stripped of their top two players. I'll do my best, I say. Tomorrow, Asher continues as I follow him into an elevator leading up to the second floor, we'll catch you and Ren up on how things work in the championship games. I'll walk you both through an official game. Although you... He pauses to spin around and give me a calculating look. May already know more than you let on. I hold my hands up. It was an accident, I say, feeling like I've repeated this forever. I didn't know what I was doing. You did know, Asher counters without hesitation. In fact, you're a much better Warcross player than your level suggests, aren't you? He nods up at the numbers above my head. After your name went viral, I looked up your Warcross account. I studied the few games that you did play. Those are not the skills of an architect who is only on level 28. Why are you so much better than your level suggests? What makes you say that? I just play against other beginners. You think I can't see through that? He has been paying attention to me. It's true. I stream my plays live when I'm actually linked in under my public Warcross account. But my encrypted anonymous self is the account I use more often. All the hours I rack up under it don't count into my leveling. Still, I'm not about to tell Asher that. I just haven't had the money or time to play as often as I want, I say. But I'm a pretty fast learner. Asher doesn't seem to buy this at all, but he lets it slide. Every other team is going to underestimate you. They'll say I've lost my touch, that I picked you just for the news coverage it'll get the writers. But we know better than that, don't we? I don't waste my time on players with no potential. You're a weapon in disguise, and I intend to keep it that way until our first game. It seems I'm becoming the weapon in disguise for more people than I'd like. We reach the second floor. Asher spins to face me, leans his head against the back of his chair, and exchanges a look with Hammy. She just nods at him, bunches up her curls on her head, and lets them go again. Hammy will show you the rest, Asher says. We're heading out in a few hours to the opening party. He starts rolling back toward the elevator. All the players will be out in force. If you've never seen an opening party before, brace yourself. It's a wild one. Hammy looks me over the instant Asher leaves. She's the same height as me, but somehow the jut of her chin makes her look taller than she is. She motions me forward and heads to the door closest to us. This is your room, she says over her shoulder at me. I half expect the door to swing open like a regular door, but instead it slides to one side. The room is enormous, even larger than the penthouse hotel suite that I had. One entire glass wall opens up to my own private patio, half of which is taken up by a shimmering blue infinity pool that goes all the way to the edge of the balcony. A waterfall cascades into the pool from somewhere on the roof. The rest of the walls are virtually painted by my lenses with ivory and shimmering gold. When I reach out to touch the colors, they ripple under my fingers, sending waves across my room. At the same time, three small buttons right above my hand hover against the wall. One says off, another says switch scene, while a third says customize. I decide to turn off the colors for now, then press the first button. The walls are replaced by blank space. I look around, My bed is huge, piled high with furry cushions and blankets, and my rugs match the ones downstairs. A work area dominates the rest of the space. Chairs, a clean desk. Hammy grins at my expression. "And yours is the smallest room," she says. I turn back to the space. This place is ridiculous. "Everything in the dorm is gamified," she explains, "like the rest of Tokyo. You'll earn 3 notes every time you customize your walls, and 1 note for switching the scenery. The room's pre-programmed to your Warcross account. If you're logged in, then the house system knows you're the one who's coming inside." "How does this work?" I ask. She walks over and nods at an on button hovering near the surface of the desk, but doesn't try to touch it. "You're the only one who can turn on your work area," she says. "Press that." I touch it. The instant I do, the previously blank desk lights up soft stripes in our team colors with a welcome message for me over it in white text. A second later, a holographic screen rises up from the desk. It's a standard desktop display, except it's floating in midair. These types of desktops have only recently started shipping in the States, and they're, of course, way out of my price range. Hammy smiles at my expression. "Swipe the screen towards your walls," she says. I touch the screen with 2 fingers, then make a swiping motion toward the wall we're facing. The display on the screen follows my fingers, flying from the screen onto the wall, where it fills up the entire space, fully magnified. "The downstairs living room has the best work area, of course," Hammy adds. "But this isn't all of our rooms. Good for any impromptu team meetings." If the same system is installed downstairs, then each room's desktop isn't nearly as secure as she thinks it is. I can work my way into the main system, and then I'll be able to get into each of their individual systems, too, regardless of who the work area is tailored for. I smile at the gorgeous wall-sized display. "Thanks. I was starting to think no American would ever be the first draft pick." Hammy tucks a curl behind her ear. "Nice to have you on the team. Maybe I'll stop teasing Ash and target you for a change." She winks and turns away before I can respond. I stay where I am until she steps out of my room, and the door slides shut behind her. Then I put my hands on my hips and admire the room. My space. In the Phoenix Writer's official house. I walk over to where my few belongings have been delivered and placed by my bed. Then take out my Christmas ornament and Dad's painting. I prop them carefully up on the shelf. They look small there, too simple for this luxurious room. I imagine Dad standing beside me. "Well, Emmy," he'd say, pushing his glasses up. "Well, well." At the thought of my father, my attention goes to my closet. With a tap of my finger against the door, it slides open, revealing a space as large as the studio where Kira and I lived. Holy hell. The closet is already filled with an assortment of clothes, every single one of them a high-end brand. I stare in disbelief before I walk inside, running my hands along the hangers. Each item is easily worth thousands. Shirts, jeans, dresses, coats, shoes, purses and clutches, belts and jewelry. My hand stops at the shoe rack, where I pick up an exquisite pair of white, red, and green kicks that smell like new leather. The heels decorated with gold studs. Like everything else in the closet, the shoes still have a tag hanging on them, accompanied by a small greeting card. Gucci, official sponsor of Warcross Championships 8. Sponsored gifts. No wonder every professional player always looks like they just stepped off a runway. I slip off my well-worn boots, tuck them carefully in one corner, and then try on the new shoes. They fit like a glove. An hour flies by while I feverishly try on everything in my closet. There's even a shelf dedicated to face masks in all colors and patterns, an accessory I've seen worn all over Tokyo. I try a few of them on, pulling their straps over each of my ears so that the mask covers my mouth and nose. Might be a good thing to have if I need to go around the city unrecognized. When I'm done, I stand there, still decked out in lavish items, breathless and uneasy. Each thing in here costs more than my entire debt before Hideo erased it. Hideo. I shake my head, put everything back, and step out of my closet. There'll be plenty of time later to admire all of this. For now, back to work. Hideo had made sure that I would be drafted onto a team, but now it would be up to me to make sure my team won each round. The longer the Phoenix Riders stay in the championship tournaments, the more time I have to investigate the players. At this very moment, other hunters are probably hot on Zero's trail, reporting their findings to Hideo while I gape at my new wardrobe. They would have been at the war draft, too. What if they also saw the dark silhouette perched in the ceiling scaffolding? Right now, somebody else might be earning $10 million. I might already be doomed to return to New York. And here I am, playing around in my new closet. I jerk into motion. First, I bring up my shields and switch to the anonymous, invisible version of my account. Then I sit down on the edge of my bed and pull up the screenshot I'd taken earlier of the dome's scaffolding. The image is a 3D capture, one that I can rotate from its point of origin. In addition, it's caught all of the data and code running in the dome at the moment of capture. I squint at the static silhouette in my 3D screenshot. Zooming in on it only makes it blurrier. I can see the code running the virtual simulations around the dome, but I can't see any code or data on this shape. I type in a few commands and strip away the visuals of the screenshot so that I'm now immersed inside reams of code. Where his silhouette is, I can only see a patch of static. I sit back, pondering. He is hidden from me in every single way, except that I could see him. He probably didn't expect that. If this is Zero, then he's not disguising himself as well as he should be. But the Tokyo Dome is on its own network of connections for the war draft. The easiest way for this person to have hacked his way up there is if he was already approved to enter the arena and had already physically cleared security. Someone in the audience, then. Or a player, like Hideo suspects. Or a wild card. I lean forward again and switch back to the visuals, then zoom in to break down the code that generated the image of him. A stripped-down view of the code pops up. I read through it as I chew absently on the inside of my cheek. Then I see something that makes me pause. It's just a line. Not even a line. A pair of letters and a zero, lost in the code. A clue. WC0. In most of the Warcross code, players are referred to by their Warcross IDs, written as WPN. WP stands for Warcross player. N is a randomized scrambled number. So if I'm looking at code about my own avatar, I'd probably see myself referred to as WP3930284, or something like that. The only time a different ID is used for Warcross players is at the war draft. During the draft, players aren't referred to in the code by their regular IDs. They don't use WP. Instead, they are WC. Wildcards. My ID in the war draft was WC40, because I was the last entry added into the draft. WC0. Whoever the silhouette was, it was someone physically cleared to be there in the Tokyo Dome. A wild card in the war draft. Hideo's suspicions were pretty close. I chew idly on my nail, my eyes narrowed in thought. I need another moment where every wild card is in the same space at once, and I'll get to be physically close enough to them in order to study their info. Tonight's party. Asher's last words to me echo in my mind. The players will be out in force. That will be my chance. I bring up a virtual menu and tap on the call button for Wiki. A minute later, the little drone comes rolling into my room, his half-moon eyes turned expectantly toward me. I wave him over, then turn him around so that I can study the panel on the back of his head. At the same time, I bring up his settings. "Aren't you just the cutest thing?" I murmur to him as I carefully remove the covering for the panel. Inside is a maze of circuits. "Wiki, turn off all recording." The robot obeys, switching off its data gathering. As I fiddle, I realize that it's not made by Henka Games. It's by some other company with weaker security. Everyone had thought to install protections on everything else, but no one had thought much about the security needed on this little drone that just serves us food and drink, quietly storing information about all our habits as it goes. An hour later, I've cracked through its shields. It records a lot more data than I thought it did. Not only does it store information about the Phoenix Riders, but it also seems preset to serve the other teams, which means it has optional connections to everyone else's Neuralink accounts. I smile. Everyone in the world is connected in some way to everyone else. I run a script to overwhelm Wiki's security. While it's working, I worm my way into each of my teammates' accounts. I crack into their emails, their messages, their memories. From there, I set up my hack to penetrate each of the accounts of the other teams. It's going to take a while to download everything, but it's running now. I replace Wiki's panel, double-check to make sure I leave no trace of my presence behind, and then reboot the robot. It turns back on, its eyes blinking, its data gathering set back to normal. I pat it once on the head, then accept another strawberry soda. "Thanks, Wiki," I say, winking at it. It records my preference, then rolls out of my room again. I pop open the soda and take a sip. By tomorrow, I should be in. Chapter 11. By the time the sun sets and we arrive in the heart of Shibuya, the neon lights of Tokyo have already lit up, casting the city in a glittering rainbow of color. Security guards swarm around our limo as we pull up to the nightclub's entrance. The streets are fenced off so that no cars other than ours can come through, and a red carpet lines the sidewalk. We are all wearing our lenses. Through them, silver and gold sparks fly on either side of the club's glass doors, while a War Cross logo hovers over the top of the building. The sidewalk's pavement is aglow with a kaleidoscope of bright swirling colors. The club's name, Sound Museum Vision, hangs over the glass doors as a giant glowing logo. Even from out here, I can hear pounding music from inside, the deep beats of a DJ Ren track. The only people allowed inside the club tonight are the official Warcross players, the employees of Henka Games, and a smattering of Warcross fans who were picked by a lottery system to attend. Now they're clustered outside in a haphazard line, waiting for the security to let them in. As our team approaches the entrance, the fans let out a chorus of screams. The four of us are wearing matching black face masks tonight. Hammy is first, her curls loose, long, and full, her outfit a yellow and white dress paired with black heels. Asher comes behind her, looking sleek in a bold red suit, while Roshan is dressed from head to toe in black. My hands fiddle constantly with the hem of one of my new dresses. It's layered in soft white chiffon, which contrasts nicely with my tattoos and rainbow hair, but it rides up higher than I thought it would. I've never been inside an upscale club like this one, and as we walk past the crowd of fans, I wonder whether maybe I should have picked a different outfit. Hideo will be here tonight, after all. The last thing I want to look like in front of him is uncomfortable. A commotion farther down the fans line makes me look over my shoulder. Sure enough, Hideo is there, flanked by a bevy of bodyguards. They're giving him some space tonight, though, and when I look closer, I realize that he's kneeling to sign a poster for a little girl. She says something to him excitedly. Even though I can't make the words out, I hear him laugh in return. The sound surprises me. It's genuine and boyish, so unlike his distant demeanor from our meeting. I find myself lingering there for a moment before I finally turn back around and follow my team into the club's main lobby. The club is underground. As we step out of the elevator, the music suddenly turns deafening, the beat shaking my body through the floor. Hammy sidles up beside me as we go, taking off her face mask and folding it away in her purse. I follow her lead.
Sound Museum Vision's got the best sound system in the city, she shouts. All custom-made. They revamped the space a few years ago, too. It's double the size it used to be.
We reach the bottom of the stairs, where another group of security guards lets us in. I step into a yawning cavern of darkness, flashing lights, and a pounding bass that shakes me deep in my chest. Even without my lenses, this space would be impressive. The ceiling is at least 3 floors high, and lights of neon blue, green, and gold strobe the room, blinding us with color. A sea of people fills the room, their arms thrown in the air, their hair tossing wildly. A faint mist hugs the air, giving everything a surreal haze. Enormous screens stretching from floor to ceiling line the walls, as well as the backdrop of the main stage, rotating through an animatic of each Warcross team. But with my lenses on, the space transforms into something magical. The ceiling looks like a night sky covered by a sheet of stars, with green and red streaks of what look like northern lights dancing from one end to the other. Some of the stars move toward us, showering us with sparks, as if stardust is raining over us. Every time a deep bass drops, the ground glows in a symphony of light. Official players on the floor shine in the dark, their outfits lit up in neon, their names, team affiliation, and level hovering over their heads like golden trophies. Around them cluster heavy crowds. Everyone's trying to get a moment of their time on the dance floor. Maybe Zero is here, watching, I remind myself. Maybe the other bounty hunters, too. My eyes dart to the stage itself. The space is enormous, as big as a concert hall, and a live orchestra is sitting in the pit right below. Against the stage's backdrop is a towering screen with an ice-blue dragon's head breaking out through it. Fire appears to shoot out from its mouth in a spectacular display. It takes me another second to remember that the dragon itself is also virtual. It moves as if it were real, twisting and turning its head at every dropped beat, its growl echoing from somewhere deep in the sound system. Standing in front of the dragon's mouth is a singer with short, artificially blonde curls and clothes in neon shades of blue. Frankie Dina. She's singing the chorus to one of her collaborations with DJ Ren. Hey, ninja, gangsta, dragon lady. Hey, where you from? No, where you really from, baby? Hey, how about you cut all that shit out? Yeah. Dancers pump their arms to the rhythm. Then she sees us and pauses.
The Phoenix Riders are in the house, she shouts.
The strobe lights shoot toward us, and suddenly we are drenched in a red glow. Cheers erupt around us, loud enough to shake the floors. Frankie grins and points up to a figure standing high at the top of the dragon wall.
Show your team some love, Ren!
The figure at the top looks up only briefly from behind a cage of ornate gold bars. He is decked out in his classic DJ attire. A black, well-tailored suit, gold shades, a gold face mask, and a state-of-the-art set of headphones with gold metal wings embellishing both sides, as if he were the messenger god Hermes, wearing something designed by Hermes. The track shifts in one smooth measure. The sound of electric violins, cellos, and a deep, reverberating beat fills the space. At the same time, the room around us bursts into flames, and the dragon head on the wall morphs into a red and gold phoenix. I gasp as the floor seems to move. When I look down, I see bits of it crumbling away to reveal molten lava beneath our feet. The audience screams in delight as each of them remains standing only on islands of rock floating in the lava. DJ Ren bows his head over his instruments. He raises one arm up high as the music's tempo increases to a fever pitch until I can hardly bear it. Then he brings a punishing bass down on our heads. The room trembles, and the crowd bursts into a mass of jumping limbs. Music fills me to the brim. For a moment, I close my eyes and let the beat carry me away. I'm tearing through the streets of New York City on my electric board, my rainbow hair streaming behind me. I'm standing at the top of a wind-whipped skyscraper, arms outstretched. I'm flying through the skies of Warcross, the outer reaches of space. I'm free. Asher already looks distracted, his attention fixated on the players of the Demon Brigade who have stepped into the club. Frankie announces their presence, and DJ Ren's wall changes from our phoenix to a horde of skeletal beasts in hooded cloaks riding on horseback, charging through the audience with swords drawn. "Go talk to the demons tonight," he mutters to me. "You're our new recruit, so they're going to do everything they can to intimidate you. They want you to go into your first game feeling unsure about yourself." "They don't scare me." "I should hope not." Asher blinks at me. "But I want you to look like it. Make them underestimate you. I want them to think they've got you cornered and fearful, and that we made a huge mistake picking you as the first draft. Let them feel smug. Then we'll destroy them in the games and leave them shocked." Roshan gives Asher a sidelong look. "A little early to be sending our wild card into the line of fire," he says. "She can handle it," Asher grins at me. "You got line of five written all over your face." I decide to smile back, hoping things aren't written so clearly on my face that Asher figures out what I'm really doing here. My attention turns back to the demons. They're gathered close to the stage where DJ Ren is performing. It's a good enough excuse for me to go gather data on all of them. "Will do, Captain," I say. As we begin to cut through the mass of elbows and shoulders, Roshan hands me a drink. "You'll need it," he mutters. "Ash always feels like needling our rivals a little before the games. But if you don't want to talk to the demons, you don't have to." Almost everywhere I look, I see official players that I recognize. They're looking back at me, too, noticing me, talking to one another without taking their eyes off me. What are they saying? What do they know? Are any of them bounty hunters, too? For someone used to being off the grid, the attention on me feels a little unnerving. But I just grin back each time. "Let's go," I say to Roshan. "People are going to be talking about me anyway. I might as well get used to confrontation." Roshan leans over to me and nods in the direction of the Demon Brigade's Max Martin and Tremaine Blackburn, chatting in a corner. "Well, if we ever play the demons," he says into my ear in a low voice, "you'll need to deal with that pair. Max is their fighter, Tremaine's the architect, and Tremaine is going to gun for you in the game, because you're the first draft pick. Come on." He puts a hand on my back and leads us forward. Beside Max, Tremaine looks thin and pale, almost ghostly in his black and white suit. He and Roshan exchange a cold stare as we approach him. Then he raises a skeptical eyebrow at me. "Hey," I say to him, planting a wide, naive smile on my face. Tremaine Blackburn, right? At the same time, I tap my fingers subtly against my leg and start downloading info on both him and Max.
It's so exciting to be in the same space as the teams, isn't it?
She's excited to be here,
Tremaine says to Max while his eyes stay on me.
Guess I will be, too, if I cheated my way into the draft.
You wish you were smart enough to cheat your way in. I want to spit back. But I take a deep breath and force my reply down. At my tense expression, Tremaine's smile stretches thinner.
Look at this, Peach. They bruise so easily. They need a shield to escort them.
His eyes actively avoid Roshan in a way that lets me know that's where his attention really is.
Ash must be losing his edge, picking you first.
Max sizes me up and down.
Well, maybe Ash just wanted to pick someone who matched his team's pedigree. Isn't that right, Amadi?
He says to Roshan. Even as both demons' stares linger on me, they still don't speak to me directly. Roshan's hand tightens a little against my arm.
Can't even get into a fancy restaurant with a level 28 rank. She looks like she came from a used clothes bin.
I pretend to lose my balance and stomp down hard on Max's shoe with my heel. Max lets out a yelp.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry,
I blurt out, pretending to be shocked.
It's impossible to walk in these used heels.
Roshan glances at me in surprise. A small smile hovers on the edge of his lips.
Look, I know we haven't started off on the best foot.
Literally, I say to Max as he glares at me.
But I thought that maybe we could start over. You know, to show good sportsmanship.
I hold my hand out to them, waiting for a handshake. Tremaine is the first one to burst out laughing.
Wow, he exclaims over the music. You're as wild-caught as they get.
He makes a point to ignore my outstretched hand.
Look, Princess Peach, this isn't how things work in the championships.
I give him an innocent look of confusion.
Oh? Then how does it work?
He holds up a finger.
I play you.
Another finger goes up.
I beat you. And then, if you ask nicely, I'll sign an autograph for you. That's pretty generous sportsmanship, don't you think?
The fans around them smirk at me, and even over DJ Ren's music, I can hear their snickers. It takes all my self-control to not ball up my fist right now and knock the smile off Tremaine's face. I've gotten in plenty of fights over less. Instead, I bring up all the info I can on both players. By now, my hack has worked its way into the demons' accounts. But nothing about the data on these two seems suspicious. I turn my attention to Max Martin's info. His is surprisingly sparse, too. No odd security shields. Nothing useful. Roshan comes to my aid before the demons can add anything else.
Save your mouths,
he says coolly, his gaze lingering on Tremaine. They won't help you in the arena. Tremaine casts me a dismissive glance. I'm glad to see it. They are going to underestimate me.
Big words from the lowest-ranking team.
His eyes dart briefly to Roshan.
Go back to your riders.
Then he starts to walk away, and Max follows in his wake. Who drove over their pets this morning? I mutter to Roshan, my eyes on Tremaine's back.
It's just a part of the demon strategy. They talk the ugly talk and hope that some of it gets under the skin of their opponents, that it sticks there.
Sometimes it works. Repeat an insult enough times and anyone will start to believe it. A faint memory of past tournaments comes back to me, and suddenly I recall seeing Tremaine and Roshan frequently together, laughing and smiling.
Hey, I say. Tremaine used to be a Phoenix Rider, didn't he? Weren't you friends?
Roshan's expression darkens.
You could say that.
What happened?
Tremaine wants to win, always,
he replies. Simple as that. So when the Demon Brigade became the hot new team, he wanted out of the Riders, He shrugs. It's just as well. They suit his personality better anyway. And then, I remember that Roshan and Tremaine were both wild cards in the same year. Roshan had been the first draft pick. I want to ask him about it, but the look on his face tells me that he's eager to change the subject. Maybe they had been more than friends. So I just nod and let it drop. Hammy waving to us from the other side of the dance floor catches our attention. She's pointing to a cluster of people gathered around someone. It takes me a second to realize that it's Hideo, with the sleeves of his tuxedo shirt rolled up to his elbows and his blazer slung over one shoulder. Ken walks beside him, greeting fans and players alike with his huge, animated grin. Hideo is more reserved. His expression as serious as I remember it, even as he gives polite greetings of his own. Hammy pushes her way over to us and grabs us each by the arm.
Let's go say hi.
We end up jumbled in the back behind a group of Cloud Knight players and Team Andromeda, while ahead of us, Max and Tremaine shake Hideo's hand in turn. Tremaine is saying something rapidly to him, while Hideo nods patiently without smiling. I bite my lip, tugging self-consciously at my dress and cursing my decision to wear this thing. Then Hideo's gaze lands on me. My breath hitches. He bids a brief farewell to Tremaine and heads toward us. A moment later, he's here, and Roshan is stepping forward to greet him. Hammy slaps my wrist.
Stop fussing, she says,
glancing pointedly down at my dress.
I'm not fussing, I mumble.
But then Hideo's before me, and my hands freeze at my sides.
Miss Chin, he says. His eyes linger on my face. Congratulations.
Were you responsible for my first round draft status? I want to ask. But instead, I smile at him and shake his hand politely.
Believe me, I was as shocked as anyone else, I reply.
Behind him, Tremaine and Max stare at us. If Tremaine could stab me with his eyes, he would be doing it right now.
Every draft has at least one surprise, Hideo replies.
Are you saying you didn't expect me to be drafted so quickly?
A ghost of a smile appears on Hideo's lips.
Were you? I hadn't noticed.
He leans closer to me.
You look lovely tonight,
he continues in a low voice so that no one else hears. Then he's already nodding farewell, passing us by with his entourage, bodyguards, and a trailing, screaming mass of fans.
Damn,
Hammy says in my ear, her eyes still fixed on Hideo.
He looks even better in person than he does in the news.
Roshan is looking straight at me.
Did he just tease you for being first draft?
I don't think he likes me very much. It's enough to put you in the tabloids, Hammy says. You know that, right? Hideo doesn't talk like that to his players. It's all business.
She elbows me hard enough to make me grunt.
It's not a big deal.
Hammy laughs once, sending her curls bouncing.
I don't even care. The way Tremaine was seething in the background will fuel me for the rest of the championships.
As several fans line up for autographs from her and Roshan, I glance back to where Hideo had disappeared into the crowd. He had been watching me carefully during the war draft. I think back to him standing in his private box as the announcement of my first round draft pick rang out. He doesn't talk like that to his players. How does he talk then? Hadn't he exchanged words with everyone he met tonight? In the crowd, I catch one final glimpse of his figure as his bodyguards usher him down a hallway. A name appears in my vision, and I look up instinctively. I'd made my way close enough to where DJ Ren is still standing up behind his mountain of instruments, spinning a fast tempo beat, the gold wings of his headphones reflecting the neon strobe lights. I'd almost forgotten that he's also an official player in the game, but now I'm close enough to him to pull his data. I reach out discreetly and bring up DJ Ren's info. Immediately, I halt. His private information is walled behind a mass of shields. Not just one, but dozens. Anything I've managed to download from him is encrypted. Whatever the reason, Ren is no amateur at dealing with his security, and he knows how to protect himself in ways far beyond the average player. In too many ways. I stare up at him, thinking. The figure I'd seen in the Tokyo Dome is one of the official wild cards. And there's only one wild card who was absent from his seat during the war draft. Chapter 12. The next morning, I hear Asher's voice drifting up from the atrium as I step out of my room, yawning, my hair tangled in a messy bun. As I go, I run right into Hammy. She grunts in a half-asleep voice. Her hair is even bigger than usual, an explosion of thick curls framing her face. "Downstairs," she mutters. "What's going on?" "Matchups are in," she replies, then stumbles off in the general direction of her bathroom. Matchups. Today we find out which teams are playing each other. The thought quickly wakes me up. I brush my teeth, splash some water on my face, and put in a new pair of my Warcross contacts. Then I head down to the atrium. Asher's already there, talking in a low voice to Roshan on the couches. Dark circles ring our captain's eyes this morning, but otherwise he looks alert and ready. I glance down at the coffee table. The magazine on the top of the stack features a photo of Hideo at a banquet, seated beside a completely smitten blonde woman who is whispering something intimately into his ear. "Has Princess Adele found her prince?" screams the caption. Hammy files in moments later, followed shortly by DJ Ren. Ren looks the most frazzled out of us all, with his short brown hair sticking out in every direction and his eyes hidden behind a pair of white sunglasses. His winged gold headphones are still on his head, one side in place, and the other shifted slightly off his ear, so that he can hear what's going on. He sits down on the farthest couch from me, leans back, and waves a lazy greeting to everyone. The only one who wasn't in his place during the war draft. Maybe because he was hiding somewhere, perched virtually in the rafters to spy on everything. Maybe he's actually Zero. No. Zero should be better at hiding himself than this. And surely, Zero isn't tacky enough to wear sunglasses indoors. Hammy reaches an arm out in front of Ren's face and snaps her fingers twice. "Hey," she says, "Rockstar, you're not at the club anymore." Ren just bats her away. "I'm sensitive to light in the morning," he says in French, while I read his translation. Roshan raises one brow at that, while Hammy rolls her eyes. "Yeah, I'm allergic to mornings too, Wildcard," she replies. As Hammy talks, I quietly begin to sort through my teammates' data. It looks like Roshan sent a bunch of emails last night. While Hammy's amount of notes has gone down by a significant amount since the night before, indicating she had made some huge purchase. I turn to Ren. Just like yesterday, he has a wall of shields on over his data, set up so that anyone trying to break in would automatically be redirected to a shield instead of to his data. I start to run a program to bypass them. Roshan sighs. "Come on, Ren," he says in his patient manner. "Ash, tell him to take his headphones off." Asher crosses his arms. "Lose him, Wildcard. I'm not in the mood for it this morning." Ren lounges for a moment longer. Finally, he pulls his headphones down and loops them around his neck, then reaches up to take off his sunglasses. His eyes are such a light brown that they look gold. "When we're ready," Asher says, "Wakey, turn on the announcement." Our team drone blinks in one corner, and when it does, a live broadcast appears across one of the atrium walls. Hideo is standing before a podium and facing a barrage of flashing lights. "Matchups are in," Asher says, confirming what Hammy had told me. "And we're going to play the first round of the championships." Hideo had wasted no time making sure I will be in the first game. "Who are we playing?" I say. Asher brings up a pair of virtual images for us to see. It's our team crest, our red and gold phoenix, hovering in midair next to a black and silver image of hooded skeletal figures on horseback. Above our crests are the words, "Round One, Phoenix Riders versus Demon Brigade." Hammy lets out a whoop, and Asher claps loudly. "We lost to them last year," Asher says, looking between me and Ren. "And then we got punished in our rankings. Everyone's going to think that the demons will slaughter us. But we're gonna disappoint them, aren't we?" He grins his canine grin. "Now we just have to predict what the first level will be like." "Whenever the committee pairs us with the demons," Hammy says, "it's usually in a level that involves speed. Like 8-Bit World from 2 years ago." She nudges Asher. "You remember 8-Bit World, right?" Asher grunts. "Ugh, so many stairs." "Or space," Hammy adds, glancing at me. "They have a knack for handling 3D space. So if our level involves being in midair a lot, they might have an advantage. But we train for speed. The demons like to train for strength and defense. In fact, every single one of their teammates trains to defend, not just their fighter and shield." Asher finishes. "You watch any game where they do coordinated 8-dives, especially when double-armed, and you'll see how they switch off roles as smooth as glass." "Dragonfire World, for instance," Hammy says. Everyone nods except me. "Just think about how they 8-dive in formation by the cliffs. I hate their guts, but their guts can also be a work of art." I have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. But a chorus of agreement answers Hammy, and more high-level worlds are brought up in rapid succession. More chatter about nicknamed moves that I've never heard of. I stay quiet, trying to take as much of it in as I can. But for the first time since the war draft, it occurs to me how out of place I am in this championship. Ren is a wild card, but also a seasoned player who has unlocked and played all of these high-level worlds. I've played none of them. I'm here for the hunt, sure, but I'm also here for the game. And right now, I feel like Hideo has entered me to set me up for certain humiliation. "It doesn't mean there aren't drawbacks, of course," Asher says, turning his eyes to me. "The demons are competent at everything and incredible at nothing. You concentrate on being a great architect, Emmy, and you'll win us the game. We'll make sure you're up there in no time." I smile at him, grateful that he's looped me back into the conversation. "Any advice for me that's specific to playing the demons?" "Plenty. They're going to target you early. Whatever the level turns out to be, you'd better be able to cut out in front of them and get to clear ground." I think of Tremaine's sneer and Max's insults, then of Roshan's first warning to me. "Will do," I reply. Asher looks at Ren. "I've never seen any fighter attack as fast as you, but Max Martin's offense is incredibly strong. You have your work cut out for you." Ren salutes him with two fingers at his temple. "Yes, Captain." Across from me, Roshan is the only one who looks solemn at the matchup announcement. Asher glances at him warily, then nods once. "Got any advice for Emmy on how to deal with Tremaine in a game?" he asks. "Ash," Hammy warns. Roshan shoots him a glare. "He was your Rada before he became a demon. You tell her." Asher just shrugs. "Not my fault that you hooked up with him," he says. "You know Tremaine better than any of us. So keep your personal grievances out of it and help our wild card out, yeah?" Roshan stares at Asher for another long moment. Then he sighs and looks at me. Tremaine is an architect who is trained in every position. He's the best of the demons at switching roles, and is actually a very good thief and fighter. So sometimes, in games, his teammates will toss him their own power-ups or weapons, so that he can use them even though he's technically the architect. When you fight him, remember that he can wear many faces, and that he's fluid enough to pull an uncharacteristic move on you. I'll show you in training. Asher looks satisfied enough at this, and when Roshan leans back and crosses his arms, he leaves him alone.
What are the other matchups?
Asks Ren. Asher continues to scroll the mid-air display to the left. Our two crests swipe out of view, and are replaced by two more. Winter Dragons versus Titans. He keeps scrolling. Royal Bastards versus Storm Chasers. Castle Raiders versus Windwalkers. Jeer Falcons versus Phantoms. Cloud Knights versus Sorcerers. Zombie Vikings versus Sharpshooters. It keeps going until we've reached the last of the 16 matchups. Andromeda versus Bloodhounds. My attention has gone back to where Hideo is still standing in front of a podium, flanked on one side by Ken and on the other by Mari, answering a series of questions. Can you put on what he's saying? I ask Asher. He turns up the sound on the live feed. The rumble of a noisy conference room fills the atrium. Hideo looks into the crowd at a reporter shouting a question to him above the din.
Mr. Tanaka, the reporter says. You are also releasing the newest Warcross lenses, to the public today?
Hideo nods.
Yes, they're being shipped around the world as we speak.
Mr. Tanaka, another reporter chimes in. We've already seen footage of long lines and heard rumors of shipments being stolen off trucks. Are you concerned that Henka Games will see its profits decrease because you are giving these new lenses away for free?
Hideo gives the reporter a cool look.
The benefits of alternate reality deserve to be given to all. The bulk of our profit comes from the worlds themselves, not the hardware.
The reporters start talking over each other again. Hideo turns his head toward another question.
Mr. Tanaka, this one says, any reason for your interest in Amika-chan?
My teammates look at me in unison, right as my face bursts into shades of red. I clear my throat and cough. On the screen, though, Hideo doesn't bat an eye.
Please specify, he replies.
The reporter, eager to get a reaction, barrels on.
Unranked wild card, he asks. First round draft pick? The Phoenix Riders, her team, playing in the first game of the season?
I can feel my teammates' eyes boring holes into me. Only Asher lets out an annoyed snort and mutters, her team? I'm the captain. Hideo's expression remains perfectly calm, even disinterested. Nothing new, I remind myself forcefully. Reporters question his every interaction with a girl. He's being paired with the Princess of Norway on our coffee table's magazine for crying out loud. The only reaction of any kind that I see, in fact, comes not from Hideo, but from Ken, who's hiding the faintest of smiles on his face.
I do not control the first round draft pick, Hideo replies, and the order of the games was chosen by a committee months in advance.
Then he looks away to call on another reporter. Hammy whistles at the screen.
How about that, Emmy? She says to me with an eyebrow raised. Now the tabloids are going to be pairing you with Hideo on their covers next week.
The thought sends my heart racing. It's only the first morning of our first training day, but already my wild card and bounty hunter roles are butting heads. If I don't end up giving myself away after a week, it'll be a miracle. Finally, Hideo steps off the podium, and the broadcast ends. Asher asks Wiki to turn off the feed. Then he looks at all of us.
Well, he says, we've got 1 month to get 2 wild cards up to speed.
I glance at the program I'm running to bypass Ren's shields. Sure enough, I'm almost in. Wenz is on, Escher asks. We nod in unison. All right then, Riders. Training time starts now. Chapter 13. Escher leans forward, then presses something on his own display in midair. All of us see a Warcross menu pop up in our view. If Escher can show us all the same thing, then we are linked on the same network during training. Ren had been walled behind his shields during the party, but maybe now, maybe if we're all linked on the same network, I can find a way to get into some of Ren's data. Of everyone's personal data. As I ponder this, Escher taps the option that says Training Grounds. The world around us fades into black, as if I'd closed my eyes. I blink several times. Then, a new world materializes around us. This is a Warcross world I've never seen before. It must be exclusive to the professional teams. It looks like a whitewashed world, like it's a virtual world only half-finished. Its surfaces unpainted and without texture. We are standing in the middle of a white sidewalk, next to a white street, crowded with white cars, with white columned buildings towering all around us. When I look farther down the street, I can see a glimpse of a whitewashed jungle, the trees and their trunks the color of ivory, the grass white as it grows at the edge of the city streets. The only color in this world comes from the sky above us, which is bright blue. For a moment, I allow myself to forget about my hunt. I'm standing inside a level that few will ever get to see, with some of the most famous players in the world. "Welcome to the training grounds," Escher says beside me. He, like the rest of us, is now dressed in a standard form-fitting suit of red body armor that starkly contrasts with the world around us. It makes it incredibly easy for us to spot each other. "This is a whitewashed simulation containing miniature worlds all condensed into one." He nods down the street toward the jungle. "There are forests here, along with the city block we're currently in. A few blocks east, the city ends and an ocean starts. To the west, there are narrow stairways that lead into the sky. The potholes in the city streets will drop you into an underground network of caves. There are examples here of most of the obstacles we might encounter in this year's levels." I look more closely at each of our outfits. Even though we're all wearing red body armor, there are subtle differences between the suits. Ren's fighter suit is streamlined, full of smooth plates reinforced by an outer set of warrior armor. His arm guards are spiked. Hammy's thief suit is full of pockets, nooks, and crannies, where she can stash items away. Escher looks like the captain that he is, while Roshan, our shield, has arm guards larger than any of ours, his belt equipped with potions and elixirs he can use to protect the rest of us. Then there's mine, the architect's armor. Around my waist is a utility belt, equipped with a myriad of tools I'm all too familiar with. Hammer, screwdriver, a box of nails, two rolls of duct tape, a small chainsaw, a coil of rope. Tools are tucked along the tops of my boots, too. Sticks of dynamite, lock picks, and an assortment of knives are strapped to my right thigh. "Hammy," Escher says, "you're with me." He nods in my direction. "Amika, Ren, and Roshan, you're a team. Roshan will be your captain." He taps something in midair, and a glittering gem appears over Roshan's head. "Remember, your goal is always to aim for the gem. However you accomplish that is up to you. Let's work out our weaknesses." He glances between our two teams. Then he pushes something in midair. Jewel-toned power-ups appear all around us, their bright colors electric against the white. Some are on display in store windows. Others are at the tops of the streetlights,
while a bunch hang above the buildings. My eyes follow the power-ups as they dot the training level.